fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. 5-Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. 5-Alarm Task Force is brought to you by 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors, Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for fire service thermal imaging camera training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Center, saving the lives of America's heroes, Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tool for the fire service, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5-Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and happy to have you with us. My guest today is returning guest, Dr. Gamaliel Baer. He has an EdD in education from USC, a member of the fire service in Howard County, Maryland, career firefighter, also works with the Coast Guard Intelligence Office. Brilliant man who has worked hard to apply and bring an overall wellness, health, leadership, resilience concept to the fire service. You heard part one of that a couple of weeks ago, and he joins me on this podcast for part two, and we've already scheduled a part three coming up in February. If you are looking for previous episodes of 5-Alarm Task Force, we have an entire library of over 150 episodes for you to listen to and enjoy on the audio side. You can find them all at our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. And just click on the podcast tab across the top menu, and that'll bring you to the library. And as we said, we have over 150 episodes there for you. If you'd like to follow us on YouTube, our YouTube channel is the same as our corporate name, the number 5-Alarm Task Force Corp. And you'll find nearly a dozen of our videoed through Zoom interviews and discussions on that channel on YouTube. And we hope you can subscribe there and click the little bell to notify you when we do a new post. And as a matter of fact, this episode with Dr. Baer is already on video on our YouTube channel. So you can see that there. While you're on our website, on the first page or at the About page or More page, you're able to sign up for our newsletter. We're getting ready to write a new newsletter, our first one for 2021, a new year for all of us, hopefully. And help us to look forward instead of looking back on what 2020 brought to the world and to this country and to us. So we want to kind of look forward to the good stuff. If you follow us on Facebook, we're happy to be there and we're happy to have you. Please like us there. We see our numbers growing there and we try to get back as frequently as we can. Also, the platform that you listen to the audio podcast, most of those platforms allow you to leave comments, and those comments are very important, both actually to you and to us, and here's why. Those podcast platforms use positive reviews in the algorithm for how those podcasts are found in their search process. That's right. It's not just a matter of alphabetical or things like that. They use those reviews as part of the algorithm. So without any or only few good reviews, it's very difficult for someone to find, for example, our podcast, 5-Alarm Task Force, based on whichever platform they're looking for it on. But with good reviews, we come up higher in the results page, And that's important, whether you're looking for our podcast or any podcast. That's the algorithm that they use, and so all podcasts have to work within that framework. So we hope you'll take a few moments, just leave us a good review on whichever platform you're on. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it. If it's a top podcast out there, and even some ones I didn't even realize were out there, we're on there as well. We did a Google search of our own name and found us on plenty of places that we had never even heard of before. I'm not sure if that's recasting, so to speak, but whatever it is, that's it. And that's it. We want you to enjoy our podcast. And if you do, we still have a souvenir available for you on our store on the website. We have our T-shirt in your choice of black or gray. And on the front, it has our logo. And on the back, it has our motto, one family, one mission, first responders helping each other. And they're up there. And the net proceeds, of course, of those sales go to the foundation account of Five Alarm Task Force Corp. That's the account we use to help our brothers and sister firefighters and hopefully other first responders in dire need. We've made a couple of donations so far in 2020, and we're looking to make our donations in 2021 as well. And again, quick reminder, this Tuesday, January 26th at 6:30 p.m., we'll be holding our webinar fundraiser. It is May Day 2021. Do you know what to do when a May Day is called on your emergency scene? And this is going to really cover all the spots from incident commander and what the incident commander wants, and a line officer, a captain wants, and what a firefighter has seen in these May Days, and what to do if you're not involved in the May Day and you're not on a RIT or RIC team and you have another task on the fire ground, suddenly that May Day call goes out. That's where our teachers are going to present this Tuesday night. And for every person registered, there is an opportunity to win a brand new FLIR K2 thermal imaging camera. And that's through our good friends at Insight Training, Deputy Battalion Chief Andy Starnes. And he was able to secure that for us. So tickets are still available. You can go to our website, and the link is right on the homepage right there. And that will take you to the Eventbrite ticketing area, and you can purchase your ticket. Tickets are just $20. And again, the net proceeds go to the foundation account of Five Alarm Task Force Corp. That's the account we use to help our brothers and sisters in firefighting, and hopefully we'll be able to have enough to help our brothers and sisters in law enforcement and EMS if they find themselves in a dire situation as well. And that's it. So we'll be right back with our guest today, returning guest and a friend, Dr. Gamaliel Bear, right after these words. As usual, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to learn from Andy and the team at Insight Training? Well, here's part of their upcoming schedule online. This Tuesday, January 26th, the charity webinar for Five Alarm Task Force Corp on May Day procedures. Please go to our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org, and on the homepage you'll see the registration link right there. January 29th, a pre-recorded custom webinar delivered to Rice Lake Fire Department in Duluth, Minnesota. Coming up in February, the 15th through the 17th, Buildings on Fire Symposium hosted by Christopher Noun. Andy will be providing a 90-minute webinar on tactical thermal imaging regarding SizeUp. There's more to come. And remember, Insight Training LLC, your best bet for tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where inspiration was forged by those who came before us, opening the doors for us to build a path to share our mission with the rest of the emergency service world. With a small, tight-knit team of first responders dedicated to sharing experiences and knowledge, we constantly strive to provide our followers with thought-provoking content from all aspects of emergency services and life. Our contributors speak at top fire and EMS conferences in the country. They have been guests on numerous fire service podcasts and will even come and speak at your firehouse or event. Interested? Visit their website, www.thefirehousetribune.com, and find them on Facebook using the Firehouse Tribune, and on Twitter at FH Tribune, and on Instagram, FH Tribune. We live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life as well. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We look forward to hearing from you soon. Until next time, work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. If you're watching on the video, we welcome you for the first time. If you're listening to the audio, welcome back. You already heard our intro and a little bit about my guest. And I'm happy to say that my guest, returning guest, is also now a friend, and it is Dr. Gamaliel Baer. That's a doctor with an EDD at the end, not an MD. I'm not going to repeat his magnificent bio that he has. You can find that on our first podcast with him, which was episode 5-12. That's both on the audio and on our YouTube channel at Five Alarm Task Force Corp. And the reason why I've had Gamaliel return, or we call him G, that's his nickname, G, returned, is because we were talking in our first podcast with him about his dedication to and his external service to the fire service. Now, what am I talking about? Well, he is a volunteer firefighter in Howard County, Maryland. Career volunteer with Howard County, Maryland. He is also a Coast Guard officer. But when he did when he wrote his dissertation, he really aimed it at the fire service, looking at overall health and wellness and leadership and resilience, and how do we build that up in the 21st century? Many of us, and many of you listening, and I'm one of them, had our careers in the 20th century. And we all know that firefighting has changed. The fire service has evolved. The old joke is, you know, the two things the fire service likes the most, the status quo and change. So now we're in the 21st century. We've learned a lot of lessons since my day back in the mid 70s when I started, and we're learning a lot more. But what we're going to talk about today is the concepts, the underpinnings of leadership and resilience in the fire service. And G was very kind to share with me a piece of his dissertation on leadership. I was just amazed by his definitions, the actually from an embryonic concept, I should say, and it grows and grows to really what we've been trying to talk about in the fire service for probably the last 10 years. We've seen different generations coming up, and some of the established people say, these kids don't know what they're doing. And others say, yeah, I got to give them a chance. And the kids say, well, give me a chance. I didn't have that opportunity before. But in this paperwork that he's provided to us and that I've read, the portion that I've read, it is so definitive of what we're looking for in leadership. And so, gee, let's start with that concept of how you decided to go all the way back really to that embryonic stage. And it's almost like I mentioned in the last podcast of when I wrote that paper on tending a garden, and you plant a seed and you water it and you give it some sun, can't wait for that first bloom, that first little green sprout that pops up. And you're so excited because you created something out of a seed. But if you don't take care of it and tend it and make sure it stays healthy and vibrant, that plant is not going to grow. It's going to wither and be gone. And I think your definitions here, what I've read in this part of the dissertation on leadership, really takes us from that seed level, the embryonic stage, and to what we can look for to create leaders in the fire service today. If you please.
Yeah, so happy to be back, Steve. Thank you for having me on again. Last time was a blast, and I'm grateful to be back on, and hopefully your viewers are enjoying all your other podcasts and this one too. So thanks for having me back on.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
So I'm excited to talk about leadership and resilience with you today. But I think it's important first that we circle back to where we left off last time and just re-examine briefly what health and wellness was all about. And what we said was that health and wellness are two different things. Health is sort of our status as a human being, and wellness is how we got there. And actually, if you look up the definition of health in Merriam-Webster's dictionary, what it says is being of sound body, mind, and spirit. And that's important because when we're talking about resilience and leadership, we're implying how that they mean something about humanity or humans. Resilience is also used in physics when we talk about the resilience of steel or other objects, but we're not talking about that today. We're talking about humans. So it's important for us to know what makes a human. And so we have to go back to that definition of health. And in Merriam-Webster's dictionary, it says health is being of sound body, mind, and spirit, or soul, some people say, right? Those are the three dimensions of a human.
Sure.
And so when we talk about resilience, then, if we agree that we're talking about the application on human beings, then conversation about how do you include the body, mind, and soul? That's what I like to say instead of spirit. So I'll use that word instead. And here's why. Oftentimes when we talk about resilience, people say, oh, resilience is the ability to bounce back. And that's a common way to define resilience, but that's because we use that term from physics. Steel is resilient, or an object is resilient if it bounces back, but that's not enough. As you would say, it's not the necessary and sufficient components for when we're talking about human resilience. And the reason is because if all you had to do is bounce back as a human, then that means you could get punched by somebody, stand back up, get punched again, stand back up, and just keep doing that same thing over and again. And we would say, oh, that person's resilient. But the problem is eventually that person would probably die of blunt force trauma, you know, especially if the person who's punching is punching very hard. But that's not what we mean when we say resilient. There's another common term that's used for resilience, and it's this idea about having a reserve built in. That's used also in non-human discussions on resilience, but also human discussions. But like the military talks about having reserve components, right? If we have to upstaff for a surge deployment, or having a computer system that has reserve capacity, those types of things are mentioned in the same conversation about resilience. But having a reserve also is problematic if that's where we stop the definition, because what that means at the logical conclusion is humans are resilient if we have more of something. So if you have more money, more muscle, more fat deposits to overcome, you know, hibernation or something like that. And that leads you down the road of, well, if reserve means resilience, then resilience means having more of everything. And that also is problematic. And there's one last common definition, which I think helps to sort of round out the idea of resilience, which is the ability to overcome an obstacle. And in the military, there's a common phrase that is used, which is adapt and overcome to a challenge. And I think when you add those three components together, the ability to bounce back if something knocks you down, having reserves, and a lot of times those two things are connected. You can't necessarily bounce back if you don't have reserves in you to accomplish something. But then importantly, overcoming the challenge. Because if you don't overcome the challenge, then we're stuck with the definition, or at least the common definition of insanity, which is doing something over and over again the same way, but expecting a different result. And we don't mean to say that when we say someone's resilient. And so bringing that idea, those three components into the idea of a human, then resilience is either bouncing back and having reserves, but then also importantly, overcoming a challenge in relation to the body, the mind, or the soul. And that gets us to the very beginning of the discussion. Is if that's what resilience is for humans, how do you increase that? And the way that I know how to increase the resilience, the ability to overcome a challenge of the body, the mind, or the soul, is to get yourself out of your comfort zone just a little bit in any one of those components. And that's how growth occurs. Growth can't occur if you're doing the same thing over and over again every single day. So if we want to be a little bit stronger with our, you know, squats or our bench presses, you have to increase the stress of those exercises a little bit. If you want to increase your mind, you have to take on a slightly harder challenge, whether it's a reading challenge or a problem solving challenge. And if you want to increase the resilience of your soul, you have to be able to learn to love or forgive somebody or some issue that you haven't had to deal with before, even if it's just a little bit. And interestingly enough, as a parent, anybody who's listening who's a parent probably realizes that that kind of happens automatically as your kids get older. You start to have to love and forgive them on bigger and bigger issues. And it sort of makes your heart grow almost, and you don't even have to, you know, intentionally do it. But the question then is, how do you do that when you're not dealing with your own kids or your own family? That becomes very hard. And a lot of times what we see is people purposely close themselves off to others that they disagree with. And then what happens is you're not faced with those challenges to have to love and forgive somebody that's not your child or your kin. So when we're talking about human resilience, we're really talking about growing the body, the mind, or the soul a little bit more than we had before. And in doing that, we're able to bounce back. We're able to overcome a challenge. And so I think that sort of gets us into at least the foundational definition of what resilience is.
You know, as you're talking, I probably, nothing to do with the paper or the work, but the word resilience. I was talking to my wife the other day because, as you know, I was ill in November and part of December. And I've had, life has just thrown me a lot of surgical situations I've had. And starting from my first time my knee was blown out when I fell through that floor in that house. And after every one, I was able to bounce back. It took me a while, but I did, you know, I did my rehab and stuff like that, and I was able to bounce back. So, you know, 5 knee surgeries on the left until finally I threw me out to the point I couldn't work in the fire service anymore. 1 on the right, several others, back surgeries because of the back problem. But I've always bounced back. I've always been able to bounce back. This illness that I had, this infection that I had, I'm still only maybe 60 to 75% back to where I was before it hit me. I said to my wife, my late dad had his first heart attack when he was 44 years old. And that was a marker point for my older brother, who's 5 years older than me, and me. My younger brother was always sports minded. He was always out there and always in shape and doing things. And I sat there in the car. I said, you know, after dad came back the first time, and I was young, I was 7 years old when he got back, I said, I never heard him complain about he worked hard. He was in his office for the supermarket company that he was a buyer for, a big major supermarket company in New England. And he was in there probably by 5 o'clock every morning, came home 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. If he had some work to do at home, he'd finish it up and then he'd go lie down on the couch and usually would fall asleep. And he was exhausted. I couldn't blame him, but he never complained. He lived with this heart condition for nearly 30 years. I never heard him complain. The only thing he complained about was the first time when he couldn't get a haircut. He was in the hospital for 2.5 weeks in those days. And he couldn't shave himself and he couldn't get a haircut. And my dad would, even though he was like me, bald all on top, he went every week to the same barbershop down the street from my home every week. And I said, I'm doing nothing but complaining that I'm not back to myself 100%. I still have this hypersensitivity to cold, what I call cold down here in Florida. I mean, it's a lot different than I grew up with in Boston or lived in Syracuse, but today it's totally different. And I'm wondering, what was the difference of my dad he was a vet. He was in the Pacific, fought in the Pacific in World War II. And he just never complained about his physical condition. He did whatever he could do. And I said, why am I not like him? And my wife said, you're more like him than you understand, because your doubt is self-doubt. I see you getting better all the time. It's just that you're the one who says you're not feeling better. You're not doing well. And then when I read this, and now what you just said, I understand. I really understand, because I've been injured in the fire service and I got back. I went through rehab and I did what I had to do and I got back into it. But what you just said even hit me more powerfully, because it is so very, very true of that. You have to look at the concept of it's mind, body, and soul. And two of those are working really well for me. I'm just pumping up the third leg just a little bit, but it makes so much sense, G. That's it really, as I'm sitting here listening, it really made so much sense. And now even more so, how I can see it, how important it is in not just a fire service. It's in any, definitely in our military. And we'd be remiss. We're taping this on the 19th. Tomorrow will be the inauguration. We'd be remiss if we didn't thank every single member of the National Guard in every single state in this country, and our police officers and our federal law enforcement officers who are out all over 50 states across this country to make sure that not just Washington, D.C. is safe, but that we're all safe where we are. And that is the resilience and the dedication of the men and women of these who are serving us in these capacities today. And we need to thank them for their service. And hopefully everyone,
amen to that.
Yeah, everyone is safe tomorrow. Them, us, every citizen, every elected official is safe tomorrow because of their efforts to say, we're here, we're going to protect our country and our people.
Right.
So, and that's resilience.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold, real cold in some of the places where they're, and they're bivouacked in buildings and basements, and you know, it's not cots and beds, they're sleeping in hotels, they're bivouacked, as would be the case. It's a sacrifice for them and their family, and we understand that. And we have to appreciate that fact, because that's also part of their resilience, that they will leave their job, leave their family to serve in the National Guard, whatever branch they're in, and be ready to serve this country. And that that is both the dedication, it shows leadership no matter what their rank is, and it does show that resilience.
Yeah. And I think you brought up a good point, Steve, which is something that has to get talked about, and it may not be comfortable for folks that are meeting this challenge in their career in the fire service. I know I've already seen some of it. I'm 37 now, so I'm definitely not the same as I was when I was 21. but when we talk about resilience, and if that really means growing something, the body, the mind, or the soul, there is an aspect that everybody will decline with their body at some point. So it's not to say that you can always grow your body until you die necessarily, because we know that some sort of decline happens naturally as we age. And even your mind, to some degree, some folks will see some mental decline as they age. What's interesting, though, is I think as long as you live, it may be the case. I'm not sure, but I'd love to hear a rabbi or a pastor or imam talk about this. But I tend to think that your heart may not decline the way that your mind and your body does through your entire life. That might be the one thing that can continue to grow until you die. Interestingly enough. But yeah, so when we talk about resilience, we do have to take in the fact that, yes, there is decline from the human body perspective, which includes the brain, which would then include the mind. And there are sort of life cycles of where you peak out and where you begin to fall in performance. And that is a natural process of life. And so we have to take that into account. But going back to your point about the military, what's interesting is when you think of our most elite forces in the military, the JSOC warriors, the Navy SEALs, Army Delta, you know, Force Recon in the Marines, parajumpers in the Air Force, those folks, they are put through harder and harder training sessions, and many people drop out. Mm-hmm. And the point of going through those harder and harder training sessions is to make them more resilient. It inoculates them with more and more stress, and the folks that can make it, make it. So what you're left with is the most resilient folks, at least in body and mind. I would assume, soul comes along with that too, because you have to deal with people from all walks of life that you've never dealt with before, all different races, religions, creed, whatever, and you have to work together as a team. So I would think it's all three aspects of it. But that's the whole point of military training, is to get you from being, I don't want to say couch potato, but somebody who's never been through these stressful situations. And now for the Navy SEALs, they're rolling around in sand and freezing waters in Pacific Ocean, doing mile long swims or 3 mile long swims or whatever. And before you know it, you're able to do way more than you were able to do before. You're able to overcome way more than you were able to overcome before. And I think that gets to the heart of what resilience really means. And we use it as a buzzword a lot of times, but when we say we need to increase firefighters' resilience, what we really are talking about is increasing the ability to overcome a challenge. And if nothing changes, then the ability to overcome a challenge doesn't change. And that's where we, I think, need to start including that in the discussions in the fire service about resilience, because we like to pound our fists on the table, but when it comes to, going out and hitting the gym or going on a run, that's not as easy to do. When it comes to reading something that we don't normally read, that's not easy to do. When it comes to loving somebody or forgiving somebody that we don't normally interact with, that's not easy to do. And if we're not challenging ourselves with those things, we're probably not going to affect an increase in resilience in ourselves or others.
Right. We see that especially with those of us who work directly in fire rescue and EMS and police. I should include law enforcement as well, because we see things that the normal citizen never has to see or would never want to see. And mm-hmm. we've dedicated ourselves to dealing with this. And that's, as you said, that's the challenge that we have to overcome. And I think every rookie in our three sections, every rookie is faced probably within that first year with that first, they're very big during training and in the academy or the department's training. Okay. But the first time you have that exposure to a terribly traumatic and tragic situation, that's where you, and I don't want to use the term because that's another discussion, behavioral health. But in my day, that was the day, that was when you had to suck it up. You were on the scene already. It wasn't, all you hear is about you going to an auto accident between two vehicles. All right, so I've been to auto accidents. How can this one be any different? And then you get one with a multiple fatality and you find out the other driver was DUI or DWI, whatever it is in your community. And you see the tragedy and the trauma of it. You really have to be without feeling if you don't internally. You may not react externally, but if you don't internally have to gulp down that bile and say, oh my God, I didn't expect this. But again, as you said, you take that breath and this is the challenge. This is that major challenge that you didn't see in the academy. You didn't see in any of the training because they don't have that there. They have the crash test dummies. They have the melange makeup we use. But the first one, when it's real, you have to either step up or step back. Mm-hmm. And when you step up and you do the job that has to be done, no matter how foul and tragic and traumatic it is, you've built another path of resilience for yourself.
Right. And I think that's a great point, Steve, and a good segue to something that the fire department has been making an effort, the fire service has been making an effort towards, which is, I think, teaching their new recruits early on, before they even get into the field, what support systems exist and making sure that fire departments have those support systems in place. Because no matter how resilient you are, I mean, let's face it, Navy SEALs will still break an ankle. They can still break a bone. They can still get PTSD if they're challenged with something that's so far beyond what they've ever expected to deal with. And, in terms of, and that's the mind, I guess, in terms of the soul, betrayal is something that can get the best of anybody, right. So there's always going to be a point no matter how resilient we are in the body, the mind, or the soul, where we reach a breaking point. I don't believe that any human can get so resilient that they can never reach a breaking point. Then the question is, do you know how to get help so that you can overcome that challenge?
Right.
And that's a part of resilience, and that's a part of the mind, is having the knowledge of what networks exist, what social support systems or physical support or systems of the soul, you know, having somebody who can help you in a time of need where you've met your wall. That is a necessary part of resilience. I would put that in the mind category. So that's the knowledge of knowing who you can reach out to when you reach your wall to help you get over it or to help you get through it, because eventually everybody will reach some sort of breaking point. And if we don't have anybody to lean on or to go to, and to be fair, for those who are very religious, sometimes that might be God, if that's who you go to lean on. But, you know, for physical breaks and injuries, we do need to seek out the support of a specialist who can get us through that time as well. So I would say that your point is very well taken, and your viewers and listeners, I think, should realize that if your department doesn't have some sort of support system or a sister department near it that can help to bring support in times of need, then when somebody does reach that wall, and they will, there's going to be a big gap to fill because they won't be able to get the help that they need. And so that's becoming a major issue in the fire service right now. So,
yeah. Matter of fact, we have a PSA that we play in every podcast on behavioral health, encouraging our listeners and viewers to seek out a CISM or a MIMS or whatever they have in their community. They can go to their religious leader. They can go to an officer. They can go to the chief and say, look, that call last week, I can't sleep at night. I'm having nightmares. I got to talk to somebody about it. And, you know, that chief or that officer will hopefully be there to direct you and help you or find an avenue for you to follow, because they value you. If you're doing the good work that we do, they're going to value you, and they're going to value that resilience you're trying to build. You just got to remember, you don't have to bang your head against the wall. You can chip away at it slowly, and you'll get through it, as long as, you know, you don't have to do it by yourself. Just chip away, and you'll see that light on the other side once you work at it. And as you said, and thankfully, over the last probably 5 to 8 years, the fire service, both from the IAFC, SHS, the division, and NVFC and NFPA, have all made inroads into behavioral health for the mm-hmm. fire service, and we're pushing the same thing for both. And law enforcement has been doing it for probably even longer than we have, and EMS is picking it up as well. And that's important, because that's part of who we are, and we can't hide that part. We can't bury it. We're human. We're not robots. You know, thank God we're not robots yet. We may have parts in ourselves that are foreign bodies, but we're not robots. We can think, we can love, we have passion, we have dislike, but we know that we're not perfect. And we need to say, I have a problem. And it's tough. You know, I've been there, and I know how tough it is to make that first phone call or make that first inquiry. I probably dialed that phone number 10 times, hanging up each time before I had the guts to let it ring and answer. So I think that I'm glad to hear that we're bringing behavioral health into the concept, because I want our listeners and viewers to know that it's natural, that life is not perfect. You probably found that out before you ever joined the fire, law enforcement, or EMS group. You found out that life isn't perfect when your fifth grade girlfriend went to the dance with somebody else, or the boy you liked didn't like you, but you got over it. You talked to mom and dad, or you talked to somebody else, or you talked to your friends, and how come he doesn't like me, or whatever. But somehow you get over that little challenge, and that makes you a little bit stronger for the next time. And then we build, and we can grow and develop. And that's the thing. We have to be willing to develop and understand as we transition from certain stages in our life to others, that, as you said, we're all going to face certain challenges no matter what. You don't have to be a firefighter, a police officer, or a paramedic. We all face challenges in life. It's how we deal with them that defines our level of resilience.
That's right. But and I think you bring up a good point, Steve, which is that when we go through these challenges, we develop. And so that's a critical aspect of gaining resilience, which is development. Again, we said this earlier, but if nothing changes, if we're the same person today as we are tomorrow, then we're not going to increase resilience just by osmosis. That's not how that works, at least in my opinion. Development has to happen. And so that begs the question then is, well, how does development happen? And I think that in my experience, although it's open for discussion, but I would offer that there's three main ways that development happens, at least with humans, which is one is sort of what I like to jokingly call Darwinism, but I mean more like trial and error. You can just try something, fail at it, and hopefully if you don't die or get majorly injured, you know, you learn what not to do, or maybe you learn the right way to do it. But the problem with that sort of Darwin trial and error system is that it can take a long time. And if we're left to just trying and failing at something, we're not going to necessarily learn the right way right away. But that is one way to do it. And in science experiments, we, you know, a lot of times what we can do is create a safe environment to do trial and error. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think that sometimes the best way to learn is by experiencing trial and error in a way that you can do it safely. There's another way, which is modeling somebody else or observing somebody else doing something the right way. We can do that, and then we copy what they do. Our development or our growth in that area may be a little less deep than if we tried and failed ourselves to find the right way, but we can get there quicker. If we see somebody doing something the right way and we follow what they're doing, we can develop ourselves faster by just observing somebody. And then there's, I think, one last way, which is just transfer of ideas or transfer of knowledge. And that's maybe the shallowest way, or at least it risks being the shallowest way, just by like reading something or exchanging ideas. But it's also the quickest way, and it's the least restrictive in the sense that it's not bound by time or space. So you can read somebody's ideas from across the world, and they've been dead for thousands of years, and you can still learn and develop from reading their ideas. And so I think those three ways are the three key areas of how to build resilience, which is either you got to try and fail until you learn the right way. You can watch somebody else do it the right way and have them teach you, or you can learn, educate yourself, or have somebody educate you on doing something better. And those are the keys to development in whether it's your body, your mind, or your soul. And that would be how we build resilience. And so what I'm saying is resilience really does hinge on new knowledge of something. If we don't learn how to make our bodies stronger, our minds better, or our souls love more or forgive more, then we can't build resilience. And so there's some sort of training or educational aspect, I think, to building resilience.
That's a great point. And I hope that our listeners and viewers will take that to heart, to know that you shouldn't and should not want to stay stagnant. You have to evolve. And part of that is as you said, is all three parts. Because you can go to every training class that's offered in your vicinity and every national training conference you can go to. That doesn't mean that just by sitting there and watching them that you're going to go back to your department and you're going to know how to do everything in every one of those classes that you've seen. Because you need to, if you didn't have a chance to put hands on or try it yourself and see, were you successful, were you not successful? Let's just say breaching a door the first time. Okay, well, they give you nothing and you have to do it with your hands to see if you can get through the door. You can't get through it. So then you have to choose a tool. All right, so most of us will, you know, probably go to a Halligan and maybe a pry bar. Those who have a Nesta bar may want to try the new Nesta bar, but we're going to use a tool in the same way that higher apes have learned to use a tool. We've probably all seen how, you know, a chimp who wants termites will get a stick, put it in the mound, and then suck them up. That's that was the evolution of that ape learning to use the tool. So we have to learn to use our tools as well. And we have to do it in a manner that will have meaning to us to build that resilience. Maybe that first time we put that Halligan in there and we try to punch that lock, it didn't work. Okay, doesn't mean you're a failure, doesn't mean you're a bad person. All it means is that that method that you used at that moment didn't work. So now hopefully your trainer, your officer is going to say, all right, let's try this. Put the point right in the key thing, and you have the sledge, knock it. Boom, it goes right through, doors open, you breach the door. You're successful. Now you know, you've learned, oh, I can't do it just on the using the leverage. I need to use power behind it to do it. Now I got it. Nobody got hurt. You know, the world didn't stop spinning, but you learned a new skill that makes you a better firefighter, and a better, you have more information on the next call where you might have to do that.
That's a great example, Steve.
So I think there's so much to this. We could probably do the entire podcast on just resilience, but let's hold off where we are right now because there's so much more to do on leadership as well. But I think it was smart for us to start with resilience. I'm glad you started us there, because if you don't have that resilience, that open mind, to that attitude, to be open to mind, a body and soul, then no matter what you learn, you're either going to be, you either won't be able to do it, or you'll be an automaton. But you're not going to be able to really, you need that resilience to be a leader, because a leader gets turned down many, many times.
Right.
Yes, you can command the people under you, but when you go to the people above you and you have this, I have this great idea and let's do this, it'll be work out great. And the chief says, no, I don't think so. But thanks, maybe another time. You have to be able to take that disapproval and say, all right, I gave it a try. Let's get on with life and move ahead to the next thing.
And that's right.
Yeah. So, all right. So you know what?
Should we transition to leadership? Oh,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, so let's take a quick break. Let's take our first break here. And then when we come back, we're going to transition to leadership. And I wish I could just show you the pages, how I marked them up with my highlighter, that in the first 8 pages of G's section of the dissertation that he shared with me. But you're going to be amazed by what you learn about leadership, because I have never seen it, what these definitions, the basic, starting at the very, very basic level, in any of discussions that I've seen online or read in our trades heard in discussions about the fire service. So we'll be right back with my dear guest and returning guest, Dr. Gamaliel Bear, right after these words. As always, please stay tuned.
You're listening to 5 Alarm Task Force. The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything! What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face piece on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
Imagine you're on a busy fire scene or other emergency scene. Suddenly, those tones that bring a shudder to each of us are heard through the radio, followed by the words we never want to hear. Mayday, mayday. You didn't call that mayday, and you're not on the RIT or RIC team. Do you know what to do now? Join us, please, on January 26th at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time for our new webinar about what to do when there's a Mayday call and you're not involved. Presenters include Battalion Chief Andy Starnes of Insight Training, LLC, Battalion Chief John Dixon of Instructor John Dixon, Captain Joe DeVita of the Fort Myers Beach Fire Protection District, and Firefighter Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune, as they share their knowledge and experience and wisdom on this very important topic. Details and tickets are now available at http://bit.ly/Mayday2021. Net proceeds will benefit the 5-Alarm Task Force Corps Foundation account used to help our brothers and sisters in dire need. 2020 has been a heck of a year for most of us. Let us never forget our more than 100 first responders from all branches of public service who we have lost to COVID-19, as well as the doctors, nurses, respiratory therapists, and other health workers who we have lost. May their memories always be for a blessing. From our presenters and the 5-Alarm Task Force team, we wish you a happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, and may we all celebrate a happy, healthy, and safe New Year.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it, and you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. Hey, guys, you call out. I'm not feeling well. And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC SHS websites.
And welcome back to this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force. I'm Steve Green, your host. With me is my returning guest, Gamaliel Baer, with an EDD, Doctor in Education, and he goes by the nickname G among his friends and family. And in our first segment, we talked about resilience and how important resilience is, especially for all of us, but especially if you are a leader or you're looking to become a leader or you even think you're a leader. And so we're going to talk about the very basics of leadership right now. So G, if you please.
Sure. And I think to open up this section, Steve, I want to introduce an analogy, which is, since we're talking about the fire service, that's our main, audience base here. We know that there's a difference between a fire engine and a fire truck. Even though both of those things are fire apparatus, the reason we know that there's a difference is because a fire engine is defined by a certain set of necessary and sufficient components. And what I mean by that is, we can start with some basics. A fire engine, has to have at least 4 wheels, right? Fire engines aren't motorcycles. They're built on a truck chassis. It has to have, lights, a siren, and it has to sit at least probably 4 people in modern days, driver, officer, and maybe 2 firefighters. But fire trucks meet all those requirements too. At least ladder trucks do, right? So far, they would both be considered the same thing: wheels, lights, sirens, 4 seats. But what makes a fire engine is it has to have a water tank that meets a minimum amount of gallons. I think NFPA says at least 500 gallons, but most fire engines have 750 or more. And ladder trucks don't have that. that's one of the main differences. A fire engine has hose, usually multiple types of hose lines. And then they have, you know, tool areas or, you know, areas on the fire engine that you can carry extra tools, hand tools. Sometimes they might have a ladder. Most of them have drafting hoses in case you need to draft. But there is a necessary and sufficient component list for what makes a fire engine. And then that makes it identifiable from a ladder truck. And so using that analogy, I think it's important for us, if we're going to be on the same page talking about leadership, it's important to have a list of necessary and sufficient components for what leadership is. Because a lot of times, just like resiliency, leadership is a buzzword and people use it for all types of different meanings, sometimes knowingly, sometimes unknowingly. I think in the fire service, we like to refer to somebody who's in charge as a leader, or we like to refer to the people in headquarters that are making the decisions as leadership, the plural of the leaders in the department. But I think that when we use it in terms of whether or not somebody is leading, leadership means something very specific, at least to me it does. It doesn't just mean being in charge. Just like a fire engine and a ladder truck both have lights and sirens, a manager can do a lot of the things that we say leaders do. And so the question then is, what is leading specifically? And I think you opened up reminding the listeners about resilience. I think an important piece here is that a leader is resilient themselves, but also building resilience in others. And I think the first step we have to take is realize that leading is different than management in the way that leadership is bringing about some sort of change. Whereas management normally is about keeping things the same. So day in and day out, if something needs to be done, that's a management task. It's making sure that task gets done. Where leadership differs, I think, for the most part, is it's changing something for the better. But it has to be changed nonetheless. And so that's the first component that I think is important to distinguish between what management and leadership is. Now, to be fair, managers can change something, but that's not what they do most of the time. And we'll get to where this diverges even further in a few minutes. The next step is that leading refers to human beings. And managing can, you can manage money, you can manage a process, you can manage humans also. But I don't think anyone ever refers to leadership or means, or they imply that leadership means you're leading some sort of money or things. Leadership implies that you have followers. And so that implies some relationship to human beings. And as we mentioned earlier in the first part of this podcast, when we're talking about humans, we're talking about a body, a mind, and a soul. And so right off the bat, what we have is leaders need to affect some sort of change. They need to do something differently to a human. And that involves a body, a mind, and a soul. And I think, to be fair, we should include in here that that should be towards some goal. Changing somebody for no reason is pointless. So if you're a leader, you're focusing on changing humans towards some goal for some purpose. And I think that what we have to include here as a necessary component is that we know that you can change somebody and it can be towards a goal. It can be changing a human. But if that goal is nefarious, or if it's bringing about a negative consequence, either for the person, the individual, or for society, we don't like to refer to that as leadership. In fact, in the fire service, I would suggest that anytime we have quote unquote bad leadership, we oftentimes find ourselves stripping the title leader out of that phrase. Instead, we'll say a bad officer. It's not often that I hear people talk about bad leaders, because what I think we mean in the fire service when we say leadership is we're referring to something that should be positive. That's implied, but it's not always talked about. And in the same way, just to go off on a small tangent here, almost every organization I've ever come across has some sort of leadership training. And it would be weird to think that leadership training is a neutral term. We're not training people to be either bad or good. Right? we're training people to be good and to make a positive change. And so I think that has to be an explicit sort of check mark when we're looking at whether somebody is a leader or not. Did they change something towards a goal? Was it a change in humans for the body, the mind, or the soul? And was it a good, was it a positive change? And that's the beginning of this definition. But to be fair, oh, and I should add one last thing here. In order to make a change, we talked about this with resilience. Another aspect of that is there has to be some sort of exchange of knowledge or some sort of development that we talked about. So whether that's development through trial and error, whether it's development through observing somebody else or modeling somebody else's behavior, or whether that's development through being educated by somebody, there's a reduction in the knowledge gap that existed. And so that has to be a part of this also. If you don't change somebody for the better, if you don't increase their knowledge, then we're not changing at all. We're just managing something. So up until this point in the definition, Steve, to be fair, a manager can do that. It may not be often, and it may not be all, it may not happen all the time for managers, but they could do that. The main difference here, though, is that managers are doing something based on rules and policy. It's being forced upon you. In the Fire Academy, if you don't do the PT, if you don't do the training, you will be kicked out of the academy. There's a rules-based system that's either incentives or disincentives that keeps you on track. That's management. That's the science of management. It's a form of psychology. And what it says is, with a big enough carrot or a big enough stick, I can pretty much get you to do whatever I want. The divergence here between management and leadership is that leadership requires this growth in a human towards a goal, this positive growth, I should say, to be voluntary. And that's the whole point of followership, is that you're following somebody out of your own volition. And so in management, it's not voluntary. You're bound by rules. If you don't follow the rules, you get punished. If you do follow the rules, you get a reward. But with leadership, all the reward and punishment is brought upon yourself as the follower. You're choosing to stay engaged with the leader. And at any time, you can break it off. And so I think that's a necessary aspect of leadership, which is the relationship between the leader and the follower voluntary? If it's not voluntary, you're just directing them what to do and they're doing it because they have to do it. That's not leadership, that's management. And in fact, I will just break off one more time here for another sort of a tangent. I think also that is the main difference that I see in communistic or socialistic societies versus liberal democracies. Liberal democracies operate with the system of voluntary law. We make the laws ourselves as a populace, and we adopt those laws voluntarily. In a strict communist society or authoritarian society, those laws are put upon the people by the person in charge. There's no debate about it. In a liberal democracy, there's a debate about what we want as a population to follow. And I think that is the main reason why we refer to American leadership, quote unquote, for the world, is because it's all voluntary, or at least we adopt these laws voluntarily. So I think that's an important point on leadership. The last thing, though, is how much time passed adopting those changes. So there's something called the Hawthorne effect, which is this observation that people will keep doing something that they think they should do if the person who told them to do it is still around. That's known as the Hawthorne effect. And so when you feel like someone's looking over your shoulder about whether you're doing the right thing or not, you're more likely to do it. And I think in order to know whether somebody truly led somebody else, we have to know whether they chose to adopt that change, even in the leader's absence. So that would be the last thing about this definition is, is this change sticking? And is this person doing this thing, this new behavior, even though the leader is not around, whether they're dead, whether they've promoted, whether they've moved, whether they're on the other side of the world? And that's really the proof to know whether that person has voluntarily adopted the change. So just to recap, I think leadership means making some sort of change towards a goal. It has to involve humans, so the body, the mind, the soul. It has to be a positive change. There has to be a reduction in a gap of knowledge in order for change to exist. And then it has to be a voluntary adoption of those changes, and it has to last after the leader is no longer there. And that, I think, is my offering of a definition of leadership that you can either use for yourself to know, hey, have I created any new leaders under me? Have I created any followers? Or to assess somebody above you. Hey, is my boss actually a leader? Have they done any of this to me? And I think once we have something like this that we can assess leadership, we can now talk about apples and apples comparisons if we're trying to have a discussion about leadership. And I can actually compare my boss to your boss on an even playing field, just like I can compare my fire engine to your fire engine. And we know, are they both fire engines? Yes, because they have these components. Or no, because yours doesn't have a water tank. It doesn't matter if my engine's pink and your engine is blue. If it has all the necessary components, it's still a fire engine, right?
Right.
And that gets down to style. There's all different styles of leadership. You can be nice, you can be mean. That's like the color of paint on a fire engine. That doesn't really matter as much.
That's very true. That debate goes on every day when new deliveries are posted online or in the trades. So who painted that? Why would they have painted that yellow? Wow, but that's option. That's choice. I don't think that's leadership. That's choice. But I love the way you compared the apparatus, because a lot of our brothers and sisters define themselves upon if they're assigned to an apparatus. They define themselves, that's what I am. I'm a nozzle jockey. I'm the irons person on the ladder company. I'm the collapse tech on the heavy rescue. They define themselves by that. But that doesn't mean that self-definition gives them leadership capabilities. It just means that's the apparatus they're assigned to and they work on, and they, for the most part, they probably like doing that. And that's good. That's fine. But I think by showing that the difference between the engine company and a ladder truck, and yes, we have to admit, yes, there are ladder trucks that do, I'm not calling Quints, real ladder trucks that do have some water tanks, but most don't. Most are built and designed to give everything that a ladder company needs. And that's fine. But we have to understand that applies to us as well as people. We all have different traits, but a certain number of those traits have to come together for us to be firefighters. And to bring those together, we may not know on our own, but a leader, the first leader that we have, whether it's in the academy or in the station, a volunteer station, and it's an officer, that leader is the one who's going to help you find those traits. If you don't already have them, create them and lead you to put them into use in the job of being a firefighter. And that way you have that interaction that's positive. You're making a change. You're providing knowledge that somebody else is gaining that they can keep from experience and move on. That's what we're looking for in a leader. It's not the one who has the loudest voice. It's not the one who tells the funniest jokes that gets the most laughs in the day room. It's the person who can affect the next person in a positive manner, whether it's a newcomer or just somebody in the firehouse or a troop, one of the platoons. They can affect them to be better firefighters and do the job that we do in a better manner, in a new manner, in a changing manner, whatever, but you're imparting knowledge to them that they're receiving. And that's
exactly
right. And good leaders have to be good teachers.
That's right.
That's my 50 years of teaching experience saying that. When I started teaching, I was a lot more rough around the edges with especially the middle school age kids. Little kids I was fine with, and adults I was always fine with, but middle school kids were a challenge. And then I found that niche that I really liked about working with them, because I could still mold them a little bit. If I'm teaching them for the 6th, 7th, or 8th grade, most of them getting ready for a bar, bat mitzvah, just had one, I'm still able to mold them by not just telling them what to do and how to do it, but explaining why we do it and teaching them about the text and what it has to say and providing them a whole experience. You know, for the last 20 years, Ruth and I have, besides just tutoring, those kids come in for hands-on. In other words, before COVID, we'd start a new student off after a month working in the primer with baking challah in our house.
Nice.
And then on Hanukkah, we make latkes. On Purim, we bake hamantaschen with them. At Passover, we make chocolate-covered matzah with them. It's hands-on because that's part of the Jewish experience for them to learn to prepare for the bar bat mitzvah. And so we both love doing that because that approach is just so much kinder and opens them up to say, oh, I hate sitting here. I have to give up, you know, an hour and a quarter every week just to sit here. Now they're saying, when are we going to do when are we going to make the latkes? When are we doing this? You give them that impetus, and then you teach them about, it's not just making it, but why we make it. Not necessarily right. How, but the whys behind it. And I think a good teacher is a good leader. Has that leadership ability.
Yes, and I think you bring up an excellent example, and certainly we could convert that into a firehouse talk, and maybe we'll do that next. But to your point, I can imagine any one of these students, you know, one day saying, hey, I learned how to make challah bread because of, you know, my teacher, you know, Steve Green, whatever that conversation is at the time. Usually that's how it goes. When they say, oh, I learned this, they remember who taught them that. And I think that's an example. That's an artifact of leadership. When somebody says, and that goes back to the voluntary nature of continuing a behavior and keeping it in the leader's absence, is that that's the artifact of whether or not that leadership actually got completed, I guess, is that this person now can bake challah bread without you there. And they're very likely to cite you as the person who made that change in them. And I think that's that's something that we should be able to use in our own lives in the fire service, is when you're taught something, you know, going back to the idea that teachers have an angle at leadership if they choose to use it, is somebody doing something after they've finished having the interaction with you, and are they continuing to do that? Now, to be fair, it is possible to teach somebody something. They've gained all this good knowledge. They've grown. They've developed. They made a positive change. And it is possible that along the way somewhere, they meet somebody who teaches them either the same thing or something similar that they now adopt, and they let go of the prior teaching. That's also possible. It doesn't mean that the first person was a leader or was not a leader and the second person was. They could both be leaders. But throughout our lives, there are going to be times where we learn a better way to do something, and it happens to change our behavior from what we adopted previously. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, it does very much. And just to fill out what I said, and it touches just what you said, is oftentimes one of the students will say, we're getting near the end of the class and ready for the ceremony. And they'll say, well, Mr. Green, will you be proud of me when I, you know, do my bar mitzvah? I said, yeah, I guess. I said, not to be proud, but I'll be glad you did it and you did it well. He goes, well, won't you be proud of me? I said, you know how I'll be proud of you? I said, if 5 years from now, through the grapevine, I hear that from your parents or a friend that Billy called home and asked mom to send him an electric menorah for Hanukkah because he's at college and he can't have candles, but he wants to be able to light the menorah for Hanukkah. I said, you do that. If I hear that, then I'm going to be really proud of you, because then I see that you've retained everything we talked about, most of what we talked about. And it means something to you 5 years down the line when you're 19 years old that you learned when you were 12 or 13. And that's what work, you know, does it for me, is that, and I've heard it so many times. We have heard it so many times from parents or through the grapevine that, you know, this kid is doing this and this kid decided to, well, I'm changing, I'm taking some Jewish studies courses. Just to hear that is wonderful as an educator, right, that here they are in college and they've decided to take that. You know, I've taught over 1,000 kids since I, wow, 13 when I started. I was hired by my synagogue at the age 13, 2 months after my bar mitzvah, for $1 an hour to teach my, help tutor my classmates. Two of the kids have become rabbis.
And wow,
people said, only two? I said, only two? I said, I would have been happy just hearing one became a rabbi. I said, right, yeah, two is, to me is amazing. And I love the knowledge that I've been able to touch that many kids, and I don't even know how many adults over the years I've taught adult education with that. But and now I'm still teaching. I have two different classes of adults I'm teaching how to learn to read Torah. They do well and they love the classes. To me, one's Sunday morning, one's Monday nights. I look forward to, even as sick as I was last month, I still tried to make every class because it means so much to them, which means so much to me.
Right.
And because I know that they're learning the skill, they're learning the ability. I prepare all the paperwork and the audio files here for them. And to me, that's the result I'm looking for, is not only am I teaching something, but they like what they're learning. And they make time out of their own busy lives, because they're all adults, to spend time, an hour with me once a week, to learn, and then the time they use to practice. And I think that, again, going back to a good teacher, if you can inspire your students, if you're a good leader, you can inspire those you teach, you lead, you, that they receive that inspiration from you. That's one of the most positive traits of being a good leader and a good teacher.
That's right. And I would like to say, I think that's a great segue into a question that that's come up inside me. And I know it's probably likely coming up in some of the listeners to your podcast and your viewers, is let's go back to the fire service for a minute and talk specifically about the fire academy and whether or not academy instructors are then leaders. And I think it's a really interesting situation, because in the academy, you are under orders, you're under rules, right? If you break a rule, you can get kicked out of the academy. You need to do what the instructor says. Now, just like we talked about, it is possible that a manager can create positive change in somebody. The question would be, was it voluntary? And did that person retain that change or that behavior when they've left the quote unquote leader's absence? And so I think it brings up an interesting point, which is, I know we've all observed this. Some people go, you know, you have a class of 20 people going through an academy, and maybe 15 of them stop doing the behaviors that were essentially forced upon them in the academy when they leave.
Right.
And I think in that case, that's a great example of the fact that we know that for those 15 people, management science was occurring, right? They were being forced down a path that they didn't adopt. And it becomes obvious the minute they leave the academy, because they no longer do those things. Now, it's possible that there's 5 people in the academy that continue to do those behaviors. Maybe they continue to do the exercise. They continue to read about the fire service, et cetera, et cetera. And you could argue that those 5 people voluntarily adopted what was given to them. And in those cases, leadership occurred. That's possible. I would caution any situation where force was used and the outcome became positive change to be leadership, because a lot of times when force is being used, it's management. It's, you're being directed to do something. But I think that's why if we can now take that person away from that situation and find out, are they voluntarily continuing to do this or not, then it's possible that you could argue that even though there were rules involved in that time in the academy, those people were essentially voluntarily adopting those rules and living by those rules. So in that sense, those rules weren't necessary for those 5 individuals, because they would have done it voluntarily. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think, and that becomes very clear when we separate them from the academy to find out if they're continuing to do that or not.
Yeah, I think
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say, I think you pointed out there's a very big difference between being told to do something and being taught how to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be told to go clean the latrines because you're the probie. Okay.
Right.
Because here's your brush, here's the disinfectant, go in there. Okay. You didn't teach them anything. You just gave them an order to do this. Okay. But if you want to tell them, this is how we connect the LDH on the right side, we're going to pull it. Let's pull it now. And we're going to show you how to hook up on that right side inlet for the LDH. And then you told them to do something, but it's a learning experience for them, how to pull that line, where to connect it, how to draw it out if they have to do a reverse hand lay. So yes, you're telling them, but they're learning from it, as opposed to go clean the latrines. Mm-hmm. You've told them something, they go do it, but there's nothing they learn from the experience. And they're not necessarily willingly doing it. They're doing it under the quote unquote duress of being the probie in the firm, and listen, we've all been probies. There's not a single firefighter who has never been a probie, one way or another, career, volunteer, wildland, doesn't make any difference. We've all been probies. And we've all taken the crap. The vast majority of us have taken it and then grown with it and surpassed that level and continue to learn as we dedicated ourselves to our craft. And I think that you made that very, very, very clear. Forced and duress is not leadership.
Right.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, I think education is leadership.
That's right. Yeah. I'll say one thing about that, and then I wanted to add something to the conversation, but it does bring up a question about our educational system for K through 12 versus, college or something like that. K through 12 is mandatory in the sense that if the kid doesn't go to class, the parents can get in trouble for the kids skipping school. There's a truancy laws and all that kind of stuff, which is interesting because that means that there is some management duress being put on kids in the K through 12 system. When we go to learn after K through 12, 99 times out of 100, it's voluntary. We're choosing to continue our education by joining the fire service or by going to college or by joining the military or entering a trade. And I think that is an interesting divide. It's not to say that teachers can't be leaders in the K through 12 system. It would go back to that situation I mentioned with instructors in the fire academy, where there are always going to be some folks in the classroom that listen to the teacher and adopt what they're teaching. But there are going to be those folks in class that are doing it only because they have to be there. And that's an interesting topic. But I did want to add to the conversation that, I think if fire service departments, if fire departments are using this model of leadership for their promotional process, then I think it would increase the value of the folks that are promoting. And the reason I say that is because, in my mind, a company officer should be able to develop the members of that company, the firefighters under that company officer. And that's true if you follow the logic that a station officer who has, let's say, two or three company officers under them should be able to develop those company officers. Same is true with the battalion. The battalion chief should be able to develop the station officers who then develop the company officers that then develop the firefighters. If promotions are done the right way, you'll get that. But I think they're not always done the right way. Sometimes people are promoted for various reasons and they don't have something to teach the folks that they're in charge of. And that's where you get these roadblocks in the system of the fire service or the military or any other organization, where you put somebody in a position who doesn't deserve to be there because they can't teach something to the folks under them. Then they're stuck being a manager. At that point, the only thing you can do is tell people what to do. You certainly can't be leading them. And the last thing I'll say is, it's true that humans have human nature and we're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. And so there is a topic to talk about, which is humans can't always be expected to voluntarily do the right thing. And organizations, especially the fire service, are held to a certain standard by the public. They're going to be accountable for certain things that the organization does. And that's why it's necessary to have rules and policies. And in that sense, it's necessary to have a good management system. So what I like to say is that management is what we rely on when leadership fails. And I think, to be fair, that's quite often, because it's hard to be a leader. It's hard to get somebody to voluntarily accept a change in their body, their mind, or their soul. And that it's a rare thing to do that. I think leadership is actually way more rare than the way we talk about it, because the way I think it gets talked about in the fire service is that anybody who gets a bugle on their collar or multiple bugles is a leader. And anybody who, you know, is speaking on, like you said, Twitter or the internet is a leader. And I think if we use the standard about measuring and assessing what a leader might actually be, I think we'd find that leadership is way more rare than people make it out to be. And that oftentimes we're looking at what's going on with management, which is what we rely on when leadership fails. So
that's a key point. And, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed Steve Hurst, the chairman of the National Volunteer Fire Council. And, you know, and that's, I was in the volunteer fire service for 8 years. One was very warm and very welcoming and nurturing. I had one terrific mentor who voluntarily took my buddy and me under his wing to teach us as much as he could. Whenever we were there, when he was on duty, and even if he was off duty and wasn't working, he'd say, I'll meet you at the station and let's go over this. On the other hand, the other department I went to was not quite as welcoming, and the officers there were voted on. So it was a popularity contest. It was not qualifications or anything like that. It was simply, and that's a lot, but it's not every department, not every volunteer department. There are great volunteer departments out there, and I was part of one of them initially. And I think what you said is so very true. Just because you get an officer's position doesn't make you a leader, as you've defined in our conversation today and in your dissertation. I think a leader has to be able to, as you said, I guess I'm just picking up from you, probably affect change and impart knowledge that people voluntarily want to accept and learn from.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that in every, as you said, it's not just the fire service, it's all three public service agencies and our military and other groups. I did nonprofit for well over 20 years. I did board leadership training seminars. I led them around the country. And there are people there who wanted to learn to be a good member of the board of directors and see what they, to help the organization. There were people there because they got the title of a member of the board, or they were a big donor and they became an officer. And that happens. Okay, that's the life of nonprofits. But again, the same thing, and I'm sure we've all seen it on TV and in movies, of managers. Somebody gets appointed to be a manager of a unit or a division, and he or she bosses people around. But those who work towards a goal of a promotion in a business, because they've attended seminars, they've learned, they put in the extra work, and they're still hungry to do more, and at the same time, behind them, they're helping somebody came in after them, helping them get up to snuff too. Those are the leaders. And that's the key difference, is like you said, there's a big difference between leadership and management.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to open our eyes to see that.
That's right. And I think as an easy way to distinguish the two, for folks that are listening, is look at what people do when they're on the job and when they're not on the job. You know, when you're on the job, there's a lot of rules telling you how to behave. Does that person go home and behave differently? If so, that they're changing their behavior due to management. If they go home and they act the same way that they do on the job, then somebody led them, because they've adopted some sort of way of living from somebody that they're bringing into themselves, and they're doing it wherever they are. But that's an easy way to see, is, you know, look at somebody when they're in the workplace and when they're not, because the workplace has rules that you have to live by. And if you don't, you get fired. And there's a lot of people who are not willing to lose their job, and so they'll act a certain way. When they're off the job, if they're completely different, then you know that that they're living because of management. And so that's one sort of rule of thumb that I would give to folks to determine whether somebody's behavior is voluntary and being done sort of in the absence of whoever taught them.
So. I think that's very true. And I think that hopefully, hopefully that we have these definitions today and these examples we've provided, they're easy enough for people to understand. And they should be easy enough for people to accept as well. The research you've done and provided on the last podcast and this one, and I think there's going to be at least a third one coming up to continue this, that you're actually, in my eyes, what I've seen now is you are one of those leaders for us on this podcast. You are teaching, and hopefully those who listen or watch this are doing so voluntarily. And they're doing it to not, you know, we don't do much entertainment on this podcast, but we sure do a lot of teaching and learning. And so those who do follow the podcast or listen to it or watch us on YouTube are there voluntarily to learn from each speaker. And that makes my guests, teachers and leaders in the industry, even if they're not an officer, they don't have to be an officer. They don't have to be a chief to be a teacher and a leader in that department and to impart knowledge of whether it's general knowledge like this or specific knowledge on this is how we're going to make this is how we teach our teams to make their entries, whether it's VEIS or VES or transitional or aggressive, whatever. That's fine, but they're teaching that and people listen to it because voluntarily to do so, to learn. And I think that's probably the definition that you provided today, definitions you provided today, is going to help our listeners and viewers understand that difference in their own lives. Because the vast majority of our listeners are members of the fire service. We have fire buffs and other members too, and EMS members, which is wonderful. But what you've taught today applies to all these levels. Everything in public service is governed by how you've taught today with the definition of leadership and resilience. And I think that's what we've needed. And, you know, this, if there's a way to condense this, so it could be an hour and a half or 2 hour presentation at one of the national conferences, I think would be absolutely amazing to fill a room with 300 firefighters of all levels and listen to the educational definitions of what it takes to be a leader and the difference between leadership and management. Because I think it's a cloudy sky, especially in the fire service. I think we automatically assume because this guy is a lieutenant or this gal's a lieutenant or a captain, that they know everything up to that level and going to just welcome us and teach us that thing. But it doesn't always happen that way. And you find out, then you get disappointed. And when you get disappointed, you start turning off the audio a little bit. You're not listening as carefully as you would for something you are hungry, interested in learning about. This captain specialized in high-level rescue. Oh, I can't wait to learn about that and hear his or her stories and what they do. But if they just come in and say, all right, you guys go do this, pull that ladder and do that. That's, you're going to turn that prospective listener or that member of the department off because you're not imparting the knowledge as a leader that your office, your level in the fire department really commands you to do is impart knowledge, teach the people below you more skills and how to be better firefighters and what to do in this case.
Right.
Yeah. So, wow. I can't believe we've gone an hour and a half already and barely touched what we wanted to get on today, but it's still so important because we've given for the first time, at least on my podcast, a great foundation to what this is all about, leadership and resilience and new definitions, a clearer view. And we're not out to We're not out to say somebody's a fraud or in every educational endeavor, there are good teachers and there are not so good teachers. As I've always said, there are teachers who show up for the paycheck and teachers who want to teach kids or teach people.
That's right.
And that's true in every industry. No mm-hmm. matter what the job is, there are always people who are there just to get the paycheck and then people who are there to really do the job to the best of their ability. And I think we've kind of been publicly shy to admit that in the fire service. We may, after a meeting or we have our shift, we go over to the bar and we have a few drinks and say, geez, what an a-hole that guy is or something like that. I can't believe he got us. That was all we did. We didn't learn anything, but we do that privately away from there. But when that happens, that takes away from the experience. It takes away not only from the people who are trying to learn, but it takes away the credibility of that leader who is supposed mm-hmm. to be their teacher. And if we do that, then we're risking losing people. When I talked with Steve Hirsch 2 weeks ago, we talked about the first time I did this show, a panel, we talked about recruitment and retention. And as you and I talked on the phone, Chief Tony Correa in Jersey said, Steve, it's got to be retention and recruitment. Because if we can't keep the members that we have, how are we going to attract new people to come in and stay with us?
Right.
And I said, wow, you're right, Tony. That makes sense. And Steve and I discussed the same thing, that it really does. Because he even mentioned it in the podcast. He said, the best recruiters that we have are our members, because they're the ones who bring in and say, "Somebody, hey, why don't you come to the meeting with me Tuesday night? See what this department's like. You might like this. This might be good. You might enjoy it. And we'd be at the same place." And he says, those are the people I need to keep, because they're the ones who bring in the best new recruits that right. we do. And then that person, even if they're a basic firefighter, has become a small piece of a leader because they brought somebody new into the organization. And so I think that hopefully this episode will help people see with a little clearer vision the difference between management and leadership. And I don't think there's anything wrong, if done through politely and through the correct channels, to ask about more leader, ask for more leadership if you don't feel that it's there, that's missing in your experience. Don't be aggressive, but be interested in saying that, hey, I'd love to learn more. I'd like to learn more. Don't be afraid to say you want to learn more and you want to do more. You're not asking to be promoted to chief. You're just saying, I want somebody who's going to teach me more. Where can I get more knowledge? Where can I learn better about these tools? Where's another place there'll be more time? Things like that. So I don't want anybody to be afraid to shy away from saying, I want to be a better student and learn more. And for that, I need good leaders to teach me.
That's right.
And I think,
and what we can do, Steve, if you'd like, is in maybe another podcast in the future, we can talk about behavior change, which is at the core of leadership. And then also talk about how you bring that out to the next level, which is organizational leadership. And that way we can continue the discussion if you wanted to have a longer version of this one.
Yeah, it's not if, it's just going to be the when we put it on the calendar. That would be great.
Okay.
That'd be great. I already wrote down those two topics. I think it's a natural progression from what we did in our first podcast, what we've discussed today, because again, you laid this foundation out. This is now, we've talked about this many times on the show and even in my teachings, you need a foundation to start with. If you don't have you just can't put sticks in the ground and build a house. You have to create a foundation, do it correctly, and then you can build up from that. And I think what we did today is we took from our first podcast the generalizations of the concept of leadership and resilience a little bit, and your dedication to bring better information and knowledge and strengthen the culture in the fire service through your studies and your dissertation. And now we can take that to the next one in the next podcast, to behavioral change in organizational leadership. Because as we mentioned just a little bit today, we touched on it, that without strong organizational leadership, you don't have a strong organization. Without strong organization, you don't have a cohesive unit that works together and that learns. So I think those are going to be very important for the next time. Those are great.
I do.
Jay, again, I can't thank you enough for your time and your effort and everything that you share with us. And I'm looking forward to the next podcast with you again, because I think our listeners and our viewers get a great deal of information from a podcast like this. Then, you know, yes, have I done some fluff? Sure, I have. You know, to fill the airwaves. But I've been the last year and a half or two, I've really been trying to focus on these key issues of behavioral health, wellness, leadership, to make our fire service, because whether you're active now or you're retired or disabled from the fire service, it's still part of who we are. And we all, for the most part, we all want to see a good, strong fire service career and volunteer in this department, because we dedicated our lives to it. Literally, we've dedicated our lives to it. So I think anybody who has served still feels it's important. And there are, you know, I've met some great people online through social media who are also retired out of the job or disabled out, and they still love the job. I mean, you know, I still self-define myself as a firefighter, and we want the best for it, because it reflects on all of us. You know, it's
that's right.
You know, and that's what's important. So again, my sincere thanks. We will talk soon through email or phone, and we will schedule another one, hopefully in the next month or so, and based on your schedule. And we'll continue the discussion about leadership and resilience. And then we're going to add on to it behavioral change and leadership, or organizational leadership, and the difference that it makes. All right. Well, again, my thanks very much. Stay well, stay safe, and we'll talk soon. All right.
Thanks for having me, Steve. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, G. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned.
You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your CISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You'll be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5 Alarm Task Force.
And that wraps this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guest, Dr. Gamaliel Bear, for joining us to discuss leadership and resilience in the fire service. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training, LLC, and the Firehouse Tribune, and our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, LifeScan Wellness Centers, Nesta Bars, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5alarmtaskforce, on Facebook at DalmatProdFire, and on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5-alarmtaskforcecorp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our new nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.